Lecture 17, Theater and the Competition of Art.
In our previous lectures on Greek civilization, we've been looking at Athenian society in the 5th century, and we've been noticing the way in which many of the institutions of Athenian life, whether in politics or in religion, in cultic matters or whatever, reinforce the idea of a democracy, a community made up of equal citizens. We've seen the way in which the same units that serve in the Athenian army may be sitting in the Athenian assembly side by side, sacrificing also together as their local communities hold their festivals in honour of the gods. There is another institution which also plays a very important role in tying the Athenians together as a community, and it is the institution which has produced those works which are most synonymous with the genius of classical Greece. I'm talking, of course, about tragedy and drama. It is in the tragedies written in the 5th century, and we'll also see in some of the comedies as well, that we have the clearest articulation of a genius that the Greeks have as a result of the confidence of the 5th century, a genius for exploring human nature, of laying bare the soul of human beings relentlessly and ruthlessly on the stage. And yet, ironically, the plays themselves are quite simple in their structure and organisation. So we are faced with an interesting conundrum, a cultural form which is extremely complex, extremely challenging, and yet one which in other ways is also very straightforward and simple. And I think this leaves us with a question. Is it possible for us today, in the 20th century, to reclaim the kind of experience that the Athenians had in the 5th century as they watched these plays, watching them as a city, as a community, and watching these plays that dealt ruthlessly and relentlessly with human passions, murder, incest, and so forth? What will emerge, I think, from this investigation is that drama, tragedy in particular, and comedy also, expresses the egalitarian spirit of Athens. It is a democratic art form. Many of you may have been to Epidaurus. It's a place we were talking about in the last lecture because I had occasion to mention the sanctuary of Asclepius and the many inscriptions from there that attest to the power of the god. But most people who go to Epidaurus today are not going there to visit the god for a cure, but rather to see one of the most magnificent examples of Greek theatres ever built. If you go there now and see the plays of Aeschylus and Sophocles and Euripides that are still put on every year, can you reclaim that experience of the Greeks of the 5th century? It's an interesting question. Structurally, the plays themselves are very, very straightforward. They grow out of an earlier form popular in the 6th century called the dithyramb. And the dithyramb is, I suppose, the nearest analogy that I can think for it for today would be of the glee clubs that you see on campuses, where a choir of boys or girls will sing, often in response to or in harmony with a single voice. And choirs in the 6th century seem to have operated the same way, both boys and girls, with their single singers either answering them or singing alone, usually singing hymns in honour of the god Dionysus. Now, from that very simple form of a small choir and a single voice, the step that leads to drama is a very, very simple one. It is merely the addition of another single voice, so that what you end up with is what the Greeks would call the protagonist, the first actor, the second actor, or the antagonist, and a choir behind. And in its most fully articulated form, drama, whether in tragedy or in comedy, is basically that with simply a third actor. Three single actors in conjunction with a chorus.